You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Dungeon of Doom. We are in week 18, the last week of the regular season. But guess what? We covered the Detroit Lions, so we're going to be talking about last year's draft and this year's upcoming draft, because that's all we've got to live for. Once again, I'm Ben Raven, joined by my good beat partner over here.
Good is a relative term these days in week 18. Yeah, Kyle Meinke. It's been a long year. It's been a long year. Two wins. And I just feel like a lot of drama along the way from, you know, all the offseason firings and hirings. To the COVID mess, new quarterback, trading the franchise leading quarterback, all this stuff that we've covered for months at this point, Ben, and we're at the end of it all, and they've won two games to show for it. It's just taken a bit of a toll, which is why I'm kind of excited here to get to the off season and kind of reset a little bit, and get into the draft season, you know, and we're going to have Aaron McMahon, our Michigan football writer, on in the back half of this this episode of the podcast, talking about Aiden Hutchinson. Obviously, I think one of the top targets for Detroit with the top two pick they're guaranteed to have in the draft. Until then, Ben, I think there's a lot to be optimistic about when it comes to Brad Holmes and as it relates to the draft, his team's efforts in the first draft. It was just one class, just seven players, a pretty small class, but they've gotten a lot of contributions and from unexpected places. I'm curious, Ben, what are your, you know, who's been your favorite player, your top player out of this draft so far this season?
You know, it really does start at the top with Penei Sewell. I mean, the dude is just a bona fide badass every step of the way. And I think there were just flashes of stardom in the run blocking phase from day one. And just to see how the kid responded from playing right tackle and all the kind of drama that went with that to playing left tackle with Decker Hurt to flipping back to right and still showing signs of growth, like every step of the way. Like, his pass protection has really improved in the back half of the season, which is pretty impressive considering the fact that he's playing on the opposite side that he actually started the season on. It's just been like we've talked about several times. He talks crap. His attitude is like everything you want from a media member. It's easy to see from a fan perspective, like, this guy's going to sell jerseys, and you can't really say that about too many right tackles, starting right tackles, maybe a left tackle someday, but just, it's been Sewell. Obviously there's an obvious candidate down the stretch, but just every step of the way, it's been a blast to see that guy grow and just kind of defy expectations no matter what side he's been on.
I actually asked Dan Campbell just this week. I was in my hotel room in Seattle. The team had already flown back to Detroit, and Campbell was having a video conference with some beat writers. And I asked him, wrapping that thing up, just about Penei, because Penei was going on the COVID list. He might play on Sunday, but he might not. And it's just been a hell of a year, and I've really enjoyed watching him far more than I enjoy watching most offensive linemen. He plays with that edge you're talking about, Ben. You know, he's just been really good, and it's not just that he's been good. It's been the degree of challenge that he's experienced while playing so well. You know, he didn't play last year at Oregon. He opted out because of COVID stuff. He only played 2 years in college, which is not a lot. Then he comes into the NFL cold after sitting out a year. He's asked to learn a brand new position that he hadn't played since high school, right tackle. So he moves from left to right side. Then 4 days before the season opener, Taylor Decker suffers his injury. So Penei goes back to left tackle, gets in two practices there, then starts on Sunday as the youngest left tackle in NFL history. And who's on the other side of the line from him? Nick Bosa. I mean, the challenge is extraordinary. And I think that's true for all rookies who start on the offensive line in the NFL. I think it's especially true for left tackles because you're seeing the premier pass rusher most weeks. And the kid did it bouncing between sides of the offensive line, doing it cold without playing the previous year. I mean, all this stuff that we all know about. And he allows zero sacks. And he had the blip from weeks 4 to 5, allowed 4 sacks. And outside of that blip, 1 sack allowed all year while bouncing between the left and right side and all the challenges therein. It's really exceptional stuff that we've seen from Penei Sewell. He's been a top 5 right tackle since moving to that position. And it's just been incredible stuff. We're not used to seeing this kind of stuff from a rookie offensive lineman. And so I wanted to ask Dan Campbell, this week about it, Ben, and we can get the audio queued up here from our production team.
That's a good look. I'll tell you, I feel like the most growth has come in his pass protection is what I would say, because I feel like the run player has been there almost since he stepped onto the property here. And but man, I think you saw the growing pains a little bit. Him, going against some really good rushers in preseason and early in the year. He's left. He goes back to right. Man, he's dealt with some damn good rushers, and he had some ups and downs. And I feel like, man, over the last, really, the last half of the season, he's really grown. And you feel like, I mean, there was about 3 or 4 different sets in there yesterday where you watch him on Carlos Dunlap, who's still a good rusher. He's long. And I mean, Sewell's doing a few things that you see out of, a pretty crafty, wily 8-year vet that's pretty good at. Like, you're watching him do some things where he's trapping hands, and he's learning at an exponential rate. And the fact that he's such a dang good athlete, I just bring it back up. He's a great athlete, and he's 330-something pounds. I mean, it's just, those guys are, they don't just fall off trees. So, but I think that's where he really has improved. I mean, and that's the hardest part of his job, of that job, playing tackle. And so that's encouraging.
Yeah. So obviously, Ben, Dan Campbell's a huge fan, and it's easy to see why they're getting their money's worth from the 7th overall pick. I think they're getting even more value out of their 4th round pick, Amon-Ra St. Brown. I'm curious, Ben, what you've seen from Amon-Ra. What's impressed you the most this year?
How he's continued, even since that week 13 explosion where he went off for his best career game, is just continued growth and just continue to do this despite a quarterback change. Last week, despite having Josh Reynolds or Raymond out there, I know those aren't the two sexiest names on the face of the earth, but that's the other two starting receivers that he was kind of running routes and sharing the field with. I mean, just this continued growth down the season. I mean, just, you knew the kid was a blocker. You knew he was feisty. You knew he had the NFL attitude from day one that these guys were looking for. But just this guy's 6'1", soaking wet, not 200 pounds. And just the stuff that he did last week. I mean, 5 straight games with at least 8 catches, 5 straight games while seeing double-digit targets. I mean, this is a slot receiver. This is a rookie slot receiver who's playing like a number one receiver right now. I mean, he was the focal point of the team's offensive attack last week. And it's just, he's handled the rushing elements. He's grown with those. He's handled the blocking elements like a veteran since day one. And it's just been, now that you're seeing, like, with the ball in his hands, he sinks, like, the hurdles, the stiff arms, like, you see what he talks about come to life, about wanting a 100-yard game, wanting to improve his yak, and it's happening. And it's happening while handling just an absurd workload for a 4th-round rookie with just a decimated offense around him. It's been extremely impressive, top of the list stuff.
Yeah, it's impressive. The numbers on their face are impressive. And I got curious about where those numbers stacked up historically. So at about 4 in the morning Eastern, so about 1 p.m. on the West Coast, 1 a.m. on the West Coast, I'm in my hotel digging through the numbers, trying to find the number of receivers who have been drafted in NFL history. So the answer is 2,051. I double-checked my math in the middle of the night. 2,051. You know how many of those guys have caught 8 passes in 5 straight games? One, Amon-Ra St. Brown. He's the only guy in the common draft era ever to do what he's just done. It's impressive stuff. He's already got the Lions rookie record for receiving yards in the season. He's 14 yards off the yardage record for a rookie wide receiver, which is held by Roy Williams. He's already passed Calvin Johnson. He's had a better rookie season than Calvin Johnson. So as we're having this conversation, Ben, the thing I do want to say is I think we all see what's being done out there. and he's getting the praise that he's due for how well he's played. But I think it's important to remember that he's not Kelvin Johnson, and I don't think he projects as Kelvin Johnson, you know, as a wide receiver one type. And who knows, he might defy our expectations. He already has, right? He's produced way more than we would have expected. But even now at his height, you know, he's knocking his head on the ceiling of what he can do as a rookie. I wonder what he would look like in a functional offense. You know, I mean, like last week, no Josh Reynolds, the top deep threat, no TJ Hockenson or any other player who was supposed to play tight end for this team this year. You got Brock Wright starting at that position as a guy who was on the practice squad to open the year. No Frank Ragnow, no Jared Goff. So DeAndre Swift was back, Jamal Williams was back, but a lot of this run's been done without those guys in the backfield. Right, so there's a lack of weapons is my point. I'm probably belaboring that point just a bit, but what does Amon-Ra look like in an offense that does have a vertical threat, that does have a tight end out there, that does have a quarterback, a starting quarterback out there? Like, and how often does he get the ball? I don't know. Like, I think on a more functional team, his numbers don't look like this. And it's, you know, you have to give him this props for producing with the opportunities that are given to him. And he's stepping up and showing that he can step up and has that ability. And that's huge. These are huge developmental opportunities for Amon-Ra St. Brown. And I think that bodes well for him and the Lions going forward. But as we look forward and spin it forward, Ben, which is what we're trying to do at the end of the season, like, I don't think he is your wide receiver one. I think he's an excellent number two, or can be. And I think the Lions still need to address that concern with the wide receiver one. And I think that would make everyone's life better, including Amon-Ra St. Brown, including TJ Hockenson or DeAndre Swift catching balls in the flat. And of course, the quarterback. And if the Lions do bring back Jared Goff, you know, having more weapons around them where you don't have to throw 8 footballs or more to Amon-Ra St. Brown every single week, regardless of whether it's there. So good stuff from him. I'm trying to temper people's expectations a little bit, because when I watch him play, even now, I still don't think he is the solution to the Lions, you know, issues at receiver.
No, absolutely not. And you hit the nail on the head, and we've said it over the last couple of weeks, like talking about Jared Goff's expectations, but the same goes for St. Brown. This team upgrades a vertical wide receiver with Hockenson on the inside and guys like Swift and Jamal Williams in the backfield. I mean, this guy could be a slot machine, third down killer. That's what I see out of him. I see him a true number two wide receiver, a true slot receiver that could just take your passing attack to another level. I mean, when the vertical game goes away, you go underneath to a guy like this. I just think it is important to belabor that point, because those stats can get taken out of context, but like taken full steam way too far ahead when talking about this guy, comparing him to like guys like Roy Williams and even Calvin Johnson. I mean, this is a wide receiver too. This is a slot receiver. Everything he's doing is impressive, but just like, you're in trouble if this is your number one wide receiver going into a regular season. And that's not a knock on him.
So between Sewell and Amon-Ra St. Brown, they took 2 defensive tackles, Levi Anzarike and Ali McNeil. What have been your impressions? I think it's a little bit of a mixed bag with those guys, Ben, but what's been your impression of those guys?
I've been really shocked at just the lack of pass rush from Levi. He's got 3 pressures on the season, you know, across 364 snaps, he's got 3 pressures, 1 sack. And there have been flashes. Defensive line coach Todd Walsh talked to us today, talked about some of those flashes, but even said this kid needs to get his body right heading into next year. He had those back problems coming in, had to go see the specialist at the beginning of the year. And it sounds like they want his lower body to get stronger. And I think it's easy to see why, because there's only been 1, 2, 3, 4 plays where he stood out and popped off the field. And it's like, we're not talking about a 4th round pick here. We're talking about pick 41. We're talking about a 2nd rounder, a guy that's taking in front of some studly players. And I mean, he's been one of the easiest players to miss on the field. Now, McNeil, I've been really impressed by his late season development for sure. I think he has shocked me with his pass rush. I thought this guy was going to be middle of the line run stuffer, but he's been popping off the tape with some pass rush and just kind of, you see the patience coming to life with guys like Alim and just like kind of waiting it out. I remember that sack he had in the Minnesota game or the Denver game the next week. It was just patience. You wouldn't see that from in the beginning of the season. So I think McNeil has taken some very impressive steps forward in areas where I didn't expect to see him, while Levi has left a lot to be desired.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, our first day out in Allen Park after the rookies got here, you know, obviously you'd expect Sewell with the first team, and he was. But then there's Ali McNeil from the very first day as a third round pick. I don't remember too many examples of that. And this is, I've covered the team since 2013, and I'd have to look at it. I can't say for certain, but I'd be surprised if there was another third round pick who's starting, you know, with the first unit on his day one on campus, you know. And I think that speaks a lot to their their hopes for him. And then when you talk to the staff about Ali McNeil, I mean, the thing they always keep bringing up is that he's even better than we expected. And that seems like genuine praise to me. It doesn't feel like coach speak. I think his athleticism has surprised some people, his get off and his, and I don't think, you know, when you're talking about a 300 and whatever, 20 pound defensive tackle, you don't typically talk about them being sudden athletes. And that's kind of what Ali McNeil is. And I think that that speaks well of his potential. I don't think he's even scratched it yet. What, you know, position he's playing is really difficult. It's a lot of physicality. He's still a young kid. So he's going to have a lot of growing to do, but man, there's just a lot to like there. And to see him come on strong at a point in the season when you see a lot of rookies hitting the wall, I think again, speaks really well to what they have with Ali McNeil. And you hit it with Levi. I don't really need to rehash that. He's been a little disappointing. And I think that's kind of the blemish on the class so far. They're getting plus plus play out of two guys in Sewell and St. Brown, which is excellent, especially out of a seven man class. You got a third starter in Ali McNeil. You got two more starters in undrafted free agency, which I don't even think we have time to get to today, but with AJ Parker and Jerry Jacobs, who might've been the best undrafted rookie in the league. And if he wasn't the best, then he was in that conversation, which, I mean, just a kid that no one even thought of. He was just a note at the bottom of the page when he signed with the Lions and played really well, just a bulldog, a cornerback. So they got a lot of plus contributors from a single swing and a small draft class, which makes me really curious to see what they can do next year when they have an extra first round pick. They have three comp picks, which is three more than they had in the last 5 years combined. And one of those comp picks will come in the third round. So they're going to have two, three, four picks in the first or five picks in the first three rounds effectively. And that's good stuff, especially when you consider what they got done this year. You know, the Levi thing is TBD, I guess, because he has not played to any sort of level that he should, you know, given the draft stock. And when you're talking about back injuries with a guy his age, I think that's also a concern just about, you know, his long-term projection with the team.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it's just, I mean, everything you just said is why Lions fans should feel optimistic, because, I mean, everything we heard about Brad Holmes coming in was his draft evaluation, was his finding guys in the draft. And with that many picks in the first three rounds over the next 2 years, I mean, you're seeing some of the stuff that we talked about 11 months ago, 10 months ago, finding guys like St. Brown, finding a McNeil in the third round. I mean, seriously, I mean, like you said, there's not a ton of third. The only guy I can think of is Jonah Jackson. They've had a couple years of third round luck getting starters, but just like that's like you said, it's unheard of, and it's really impressive. And it's one of the things that people should most be looking forward to, is seeing what Brad Holmes can do with all these assets.
Great call on Jonah Jackson. And actually, now that I think about it, Graham Glasgow in 2016, both those guys were day one. Graham wasn't, but Jonah was, to your point. At any rate, it's a small sample size of guys who came in, and that speaks a lot to Ali McNeil. And one guy in the draft class we haven't said much about, because there's maybe not a ton to say about at this point, but Ifeatu Melifonwu, who is the first return on the Matthew Stafford trade, got him with the third round pick in that trade, and showed really promising stuff in week two when he was pressed into a starting assignment against Green Bay. Kind of held his own, I would say, more or less, except for one deep ball against Aaron Rodgers. Just has been hurt too much of the year, but as a big cornerback who came in a tough spot on Monday Night Football and played pretty well, I am really curious to see what he can do. It's just an incomplete at this point from Melifonwu. But as we look forward, I think there's a lot to feel good about if you're the Detroit Lions, if you support that team, because, man, one draft class and it was small. Seven men is, I looked it up, it's the second smallest class of the last decade for Detroit. So, you know, you got a lot of contributors out of that. And then you got the war chest you have going forward. There's things to feel good about where this rebuild is heading. And I think, as I've written repeatedly, I think they're closer than people realize, because they're already making lemonade on defense. Of course, they need some more playmakers, but there's a lot to like on that side of the ball with Aaron Glenn leading the way. And offensively, man, they got a lot of pieces in place. They just need a little more talent. They need a game breaker on the outside, probably. They need to figure out what they're doing at quarterback. But I think they're a lot closer than people realize from being in the mix for a playoff spot next year, especially when you look at the turmoil in the NFC North. And as you look forward, they have this top two draft pick. Obviously, it's going to be the biggest asset in the organization going forward. And so we can bring in, I think, Aaron now to kind of break that down with a very small pool of prospects Detroit can choose from. And one of them obviously being Aiden Hutchinson from Michigan. Okay, Ben, I'm excited to hear about our next guest, keeping it in-house with our Michigan Wolverines football beat reporter who is kindly taking his time out of the Jim Harbaugh beat to join us today, Aaron McMahon. Aaron, thank you for joining us.
Guys, good to be with you. It has been busy. Jim Harbaugh, the news cycle never stops, but I'm glad to be with you guys.
Especially this time of year, it seems like every year it's, you know, Harbaugh to the NFL. It's kind of a cyclical kind of deal this time of year.
Yeah, and especially this year after the way everything happened and, you know, the situation, the contract situation and everything else. It's going to be interesting next probably couple of weeks, that's for sure.
And so, were you off the plane from Florida before you were writing about Harbaugh to NFL rumors?
I was. Yeah, I was. I got back actually the first, so it worked out nicely. Michigan ended up having to play a New Year's Day game, so it was, yeah. So yeah, I've been back a few days now.
So you're obviously here to talk about Aiden Hutchinson, but I am curious, just since we're on the Harbaugh thing real quickly, is there any credibility to the smoke that we're seeing, or is it just the annual stuff that we've seen before with Harbaugh?
Normally I'd say it's just the normal stuff, but I think the nature of the report and the reporter who did report it, Bruce Feldman of The Athletic, he tends to have his nose to the ground with a lot of this stuff, especially with coaching changes and the like. So I don't think it's worth ignoring. But I will say with Jim, you never really know, just because he doesn't have an agent. He doesn't really have someone leaking the contract financials to folks. So this is, I mean, I do think there's some smoke to this, given the fact that, you know, he did take a pay cut last year, and the fact that his, you know, his, as you could make the case that his stock as a college head coach probably has never been higher at this point. So I think there is some validity to it, whether he stays or goes. I don't know. I still lean toward him staying. I mean, there's a lot to pass up here. You know, his parents are still here. He's got a good situation going. He actually has some stability with the coaching staff, which is the first time you can say that in a long time. But never say never, especially with him.
He's kind of an odd guy. I mean, I don't mean that disrespectfully. He's just kind of not normal, especially for a football coach. My only personal interaction with him was I was talking to him for a story a couple summers back. And it was early in the morning. It must have been like 7 a.m. or something, or maybe 6:30 a.m. And gives me a call. And we must have talked for 15 minutes. And I've never heard someone like less interested in doing an interview. I mean, it just sounded like he had a million things to do that were better than talking to me, which is fine. I'm used to that. I get it. But then he's like, hey, can you hang on a second? I'm getting a phone call. And he doesn't put me on hold. He answers a second phone, and I can hear him having a quick conversation with somebody. Like, I can hear his entire end of the conversation pretty quick, like 30 seconds or something. Comes back on the phone, and I'm like, hey, Jim, I know you're busy and everything, so I just got one more question for you. And I ask him the one question, and I'm not even kidding. He must have answered that one question for 10 minutes. It was like something had like flipped a switch, and I don't know what it was, but we had a great conversation after that, probably for a half hour or so longer. It was just one of the most peculiar conversations I've ever had.
That's how it is with him. You never know what's going to get him talking or what's going to get him to light up, because you ask him a simple football transactional question or injury question and he shuts down. But if you ask him something totally random, maybe about his family or something that triggers like a light bulb in his head, and he'll go on and on. It is always fascinating. We always, as a beat contingent, it's something certainly we always talk about.
So he's been obviously pretty open talking about Aiden Hutchinson, and that makes sense because Aiden Hutchinson is one of the best players in the country. That's why you're here. He's a candidate for, I would say, a top two, top three pick. I think at this point it would be a shock if he didn't go in that range. And the Lions are guaranteed to pick in the top two. They could still pick first overall if Jacksonville were to win on Sunday. That probably won't happen. I think we can all assume that.
Yeah, that feels safe.
Yeah, 50-10 loss on Sunday, 8 straight losses. It kind of speaks for itself. Sorry, Daryl Bevel. But so Lions, either way, picking in the top two. So it's probably a pretty short list for them. Hutchinson, Kayvon Thibodeau, maybe Kyle Hamilton, the safety from Notre Dame. But I think it's really Thibodeau and Hutchinson when you look at the guys who are best regarded around the league in the NFL, and also Detroit's needs, which are substantial at pass rusher and on the edge, especially if they release Trey Flowers. So Aaron, what, you know, I mean, I guess just real broadly to start off, what can you tell us about Hutchinson's game as you've seen it unfold here over the past few years in Ann Arbor?
Yeah, this might sound simplistic, but it hasn't changed much. He's just got anything better as a player. Like when Aiden first got to Michigan, the read on him was high motor, all over the place, never stops, you know, in love with Michigan, wanted to play here and everything else. And I think as the years have gone on, he's just gotten better and better. And now I think there was some hesitation in the offseason. You know, he fractured his right ankle at the end of middle of last year, sidelined him for 3 games. And I think there was a question of whether how he would come back or how he would bounce back from that. And I think he's exceeded all expectations this year. Now, they used him a little bit differently in their defense with a new coordinator and everything else. But the guy is just, I mean, he never stops. You can turn on the tape and it's like you see him chipping tackles and getting doubled and still like running vertically in the field. And like, he doesn't stop. So I think whoever gets the first or second pick, whoever ends up taking him in the NFL draft, I think is going to get a good player. I mean, there's obviously reservations or questions about his ceiling and everything else and how it translates, but I think there's no doubt that he's going to be a top of the line player, you know, at the NFL level.
He really rocketed to the top of mock drafts and so forth, the whole draft cottage industry that's exploded at the NFL level after the Ohio State game. And obviously there was buzz on him before that, but you know, the 3 sacks and just a hell of a game. It's one of the best single efforts I've ever seen from a college player, to be quite honest with you. Goes against Iowa, has the 1 sack, but is just as dominant. Goes out there against Georgia and the box score is pretty light. And there's been some, I would say, if not pushback, then maybe just some questions out there about whether maybe he was a flash in the pan or maybe he is a little overvalued. Aaron, I watched that game and I watched it with a keen eye on Hutchinson because of my concerns with the Lions. And it seemed like every time they ran the ball, it was away from him. And it seemed like every time they passed the ball, it was something short. And if it wasn't something short, they were chipping the hell out of them. So, you know, you see something like that, it's not a lot of opportunities, I would say, for sack numbers. And to me, when I watched that, that's, to me, the definition of a playmaker. It's a guy who affects the game plan from the other side of the ball. And when I watched Georgia's game plan, it looked like it was designed to neutralize and take Hutchinson even out of the opportunity to make plays in that game. You were there. You have a much closer eye of it than I do watching it on TV. What did you think of that game? And what do you make of concerns about Hutchinson as a top 2 pick coming out of that game?
Yeah, you nailed it. Going into that game against Georgia, that we all understood the game plan to neutralize Michigan's pass rush, whether it was Hutchinson or Ajabo, was to get rid of the football quickly and trying to run away from them. Georgia's quarterback, Stetson Bennett, threw the ball pretty quickly. He got it out quickly, didn't give Aiden or Ajabo many opportunities to get to the football. And when he did, as you mentioned, you stupidly pointed out, you can go back and watch the tape. They were doubling him and chipping him with running backs and tight ends. And they made it very difficult for him to get to the quarterback. Now, that wasn't rare. Like other Big Ten teams, other teams have tried to do that all season long against him. Some more successful than others. But that certainly, you're right. I think that is giving him that type of attention and trying to keep him away from the quarterback is certainly the that goes to show, I think, his ability and the respect opponents have for him. And that's been the case all season long. You mentioned his big games against Ohio State. He had a decent game against Iowa. You can even go back to a couple of games before the Ohio State game. Michigan had a come from behind win at Penn State. He had three sacks, came up big late. Those type of moments are what got him on the pedestal over the Heisman Trophy. And you mentioned him launching up the NFL draft boards. I'm not ready to write him off because of one, poor game. I mean, you can go back and earlier in the season, some of the games where he didn't exactly light up the box score, but again, it was because of other teams. They did a very good job of recognizing what he brought to the table and trying to keep him away from the quarterback and getting the football out as quickly as possible.
Aaron, I've got a clip for you. I want to run by you. It's we had Graham Glasgow, former Michigan offensive lineman, on the podcast a few weeks ago, and he had some interesting stuff to say after working out with Aiden Hutchinson during the COVID lockout offseason, and just had some pretty big things to say about him. I'm going to play that clip for you right now.
Just from like being around him, like basically every day for 4 months or 3 months, I thought he was incredibly mature. I thought he was like a really hard worker. He was strong as shit. I mean, like, I don't at the time. Well, first of all, he's younger than my sister. And I know that doesn't affect you guys in any way. But like, it's kind of weird to me that he was born in like 2000.
Right.
that kind of messed me up a little bit. But he, as I said, so like he was 19 years old and he was doing like the same weights that like I was doing. And I was in like going into my 5th year in the NFL. I was like, what the hell, man? Like, what are you on? But he was extremely professional about it the whole time. And like, he was just trying to get better. And I think that he would be a good culture fit and a good, I mean, I know that all their guys came from the Saints, and I don't know if they really want to run a 3-4 forever, but I feel like he would be a great 4-3 or 3-4 D end. I think he'd be great there.
So when you say this kid who was born in 2000 is strong as shit, I mean, that's a big compliment coming from a, you know, NFL veteran who's been around and sees some strong guys. What have you seen from Hutchinson? Why do you say that?
Well, I mean, you see him run dudes over. I mean, he ran over that dude from Ohio State. I think that he has a nice combination, I feel like, of like strength and technique that almost sort of elicits like a Bosa brother type of thing. I don't know if he's exactly as athletic as they are, but I think that it's not like, I wouldn't say that it's like such a difference. You know what I mean? That it's a bad thing. I think if it was like on a scale of 100 and you put Joey Bosa and Nick Bosa at 100, he'd be at like a 90 or a 92 or something. You know what I mean? But I think that overall he has the technique and the strength and overall like agility and athletic ability to be a good player at the NFL level.
Thanks to Jessica Shepherd, our producer, for queuing that up. Aaron, I'm just curious your reaction to Graham Glasgow's, you know, experience working out with Aiden Hutchinson a couple off seasons ago at Michigan. And I'm curious in particular with the Bosa brother comp. Do you see that as well with Aiden Hutchinson?
Yeah, the Bosa brother comp has been brought up a couple times now this year. It certainly is comparable. I don't have any disagreements with that at all. As regards to Aiden's strength, you can probably Google, your listeners can probably Google this, but in the off season, you know, Bruce Feldman of The Athletic puts together his annual freaks list for The Athletic, the top athletic guys in college football. And Aiden Hutchinson was near the top of it, if I recall correctly, but there's this video of him in the Michigan locker room doing the Turkish get up. And for those of you who don't exactly know what it is, I'd look it up myself, but it's like when you lift a bar bench without the locks on the plates, you're doing it one handed and you basically start standing up and you sit down and then get back up again. It's pretty incredible video to watch. I'd encourage all your listeners to Google it, but like that was, I think, the Michigan strength coaches trying to get the point across. Aiden Hutchinson is one of the strongest dudes they've ever seen. You know, Michigan strength coach Ben Herbert has said on the record that Aiden is probably the strongest guy he's ever worked with. And he's been here since 2017. So like obviously and he's with at Arkansas before that, but you know, the strength is there, the talent is there. And I think it's everything you want in a guy that could play that skill position and play a long time at the NFL level.
I'm curious, kind of talking about his power and his strength. Now, where was that in 2019, that first season where he really saw ample playing time? How has that developed? I know you said he's kind of been that high motor, same guy, same fundamentally technique sound guy since he got here, but how has that power and how has that strength improved? Because I think that's kind of one area where it's like, holy crap, this guy knew he was strong, but I didn't know he was knocked Ohio State's left tackle on his ass strong about 12 times. So I'm just kind of curious how that has developed.
I think that just come along in the last couple of years, just him just growing and maturing and getting older. I mean, if you look at his stat sheet, even going back to 19, when he started every game as a sophomore, it isn't too far behind from what he is now. I mean, he had more tackles then, more tackles for loss then. Now he's had more sacks and more PBUs and hurries and hurt and everything else, pressures this year. But I think him recognizing and getting smarter, you know, his football IQ growing. And then, as I mentioned earlier, Michigan just utilizing him better. You know, before this year, he was traditionally an end, hand on the ground, traditionally at 4-3. Michigan reverted more to a 4-2-5, 3-4 look this year, where Hutchinson was kind of going back and forth between a natural end and outside linebacker / edge rusher. And I think that's where his growth really showed through this year. He's able to put some of his moves on to evade tackles and get to the quarterback. And I think their first year corner, Mike McDonald, did a lot of work with him this year. They kind of centered their defense around him. And I certainly think that not only did his strength and his IQ improve, but I think having playmakers around him, you know, they had David Ajabo on the other side to attract opposing defenses. They had some experience behind him at linebacker. I think it was really the perfect storm for Aiden Hutchinson to not only come back this year and play well, but put up the numbers that he did.
We've talked a lot, Aaron, about what Aiden Hutchinson can do. What can't he do? I mean, like as he goes into the league, what's the knock on him? Where does he have to improve the most?
I think if there's one knock, it's probably in coverage. You know, if you look at his PFF grade and some things of what the analysts are saying, you know, he's great against in pass rush. He's pretty good in rush defense. He can tackle relatively well, but it's in coverage. So I think that's probably the one area of concern. If there is an area of concern for NFL team, that's probably it. That's probably the one area they're going to have to be careful about how they utilize him, you know, on the edge there.
How much was he asked to drop back in coverage? How much of that was part of the defense, like weekly? Was he getting like sporadic looks, like maybe one or two a game, or was that kind of an afterthought in that defense?
Yeah, an afterthought. He didn't do it a ton at all. So it was very limited. And I think that was probably by design. And they obviously looked at his positives and wanted to accentuate those and obviously hide the negatives. A lot of the pass rush situation or the pass coverage situations, were leaned on obviously the middle linebackers and Michigan was certainly going at times they were playing with five defensive backs. So that Aiden really wouldn't have to worry about pass coverage situations.
I feel like when I watched Michigan this year, which was not that much, but a few games, that I feel like I saw Aiden Hutchinson in coverage more than I would have expected to. Just given what he can do in the pass rush, like I just saw him dropping out into the flat a lot more than I think I would have schemed up if I were in Michigan. Is that valid, Aaron, or am I off base?
Yeah, no, he did. I mean, they wanted, it was clear that they wanted to get him to the quarterback as much as possible, but they weren't afraid of throwing him in other situations. Like, that's the thing. The guy can get all over the field. He can make a play in open tackle in the field. He can do basically whatever they want. And he was the heart and soul of that defense. So they had no issue putting him wherever. But he excelled mostly when it came to the pass rush and rush defense.
And now that we're saying this, one play that popped in my head as Kyle is saying that in that playoff game, he kind of popped out into the flat and had one of the more memorable games of the day, stopping, I think it was their slot wide receiver on a quick little screen. So just kind of those wheels like that. I mean, people are kind of hating on his bend. The guys that are really looking into that one game are complaining about his bend and stuff like that. But just like, what's the counter argument to that? I mean, what is his athleticism? What is his dip, his flexibility?
Oh, it's top of the line. I mean, having covered this team since 2017, I can't think of a more, and Michigan's had some very good pass rushers and defensive ends. I mean, you can go to, you can go to Quiddy Pay. You can go to Josh Uche. He was more that pass rush, typical third down situation, but I can't think of a more athletic defensive lineman Michigan has had under Jim Harbaugh. Like, and they've had some good ones. I mean, they've had some top guys Aiden Hutchinson to me always looked like kind of an edge rusher and almost outside linebacker. He was that twingy guy who, like, I feel like you could play either spot, but for this first two or three years at Michigan, he was so focused on the end, hand on the ground and the like. And it almost seemed like sometimes he was overpowered. And I think that's where, again, as we were talking about, the years have gone on, they have realized how I think best to utilize him. And that's what I think paved the way for his breakout year this year.
So, Aaron, we don't have a huge sample size when it comes to Brad Holmes and his team and how they're going to draft. We just have one class so far. It was just seven guys. So it's pretty light. But they've talked a lot about wanting to build through the trenches. They want grit and toughness, physicality. And these are buzzwords that I hate because you hear them from everyone every year, from every team at every level of football. But the Lions have really lived it, and they you saw it in their first draft class, Penei Sewell at seventh overall, and they took defensive linemen in the second and third rounds, really at the expense of getting the offensive playmakers they needed. And when they finally got one of those guys, Amon-Ra St. Brown in the fourth round, he was like the best blocking wide receiver in the country. These guys, they got some sons of bitches in this class. I mean, that's really what they did. Guys that have taken a lot of edge to Detroit, a lot of attitude to Detroit. St. Brown was fighting with guys on the first day of padded work, started a fight with a first round pick on like day three. And this is like the 112th pick in the draft. And then he goes out there in his rookie season. And I mean, he really is one of the best blocking wide receivers I've seen. Clearly these things that people talk about, the Lions are serious about. So I guess, as it relates to Hutchinson, like, what is the character profile there? Because this is obviously important to the Lions. It's not just a matter of being good, but does he have this kind of profile off the field, in the locker room, in the weight room, the attitude that they're looking for? Do you see this in this guy?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if there's a bona fide leader of this Michigan football program in 2021, it was Aiden Hutchinson. I mean, he was the guy that was kind of rallying guys to come back for another year, to kind of develop that camaraderie in the locker room. He was the one that kind of put his foot down when there was outside noise about the quarterback situation with Cade McNamara and JJ McCarthy. I can't think of a better leader or a better guy that you want in the locker room than Aiden Hutchinson. I mean, he was the guy that, as I mentioned, came to Michigan because he wanted to play here. He wanted to start here. He wanted to finish here and get Michigan over the top. And he followed through on all that. So I, from a character standpoint, I don't think there's going to be any issue with the Lions and Aiden Hutchinson. In fact, I would not surprise me at all if we go through the draft combine process and you hear, Aiden Hutchinson flied it, went through the interviews with flying colors. I mean, the guy is that good. he did well in the classroom. He was all academic, all Big Ten, and he did on the field too.
So I guess my last question for you, and this leads well into it, is, you know, what's it been just like on a personal level, I guess, dealing with Aiden Hutchinson, like just forgetting the football stuff for a second, just talking to the guy and getting to know him a little bit as you have. Do you have any stories about covering him or seeing him around town, or the stories that you've heard around town about him? You know, just off the field, what's your interactions been like with him?
Yeah, no standout stories, but I will say he's very good to deal with, very personable. He does, you know, take the time to stop to talk literally anyone. I mean, I can remember at bowl trips or after games, if there's a little fan on the sidelines, he makes sure to stop and sign autographs. He's not the big guy on campus feel. You don't get that with him at all. He's kind of that down to earth guy who feels like he has to work for everything that he's accomplished. And I think that's where he gets a lot of that, the work ethic from. His dad obviously played at Michigan. His mother went to Michigan. So there's obviously that connection there. But no, he's an absolute rock star from that perspective. Great to interview. He's always great with the media. I suspect he'll probably be great with you guys too. But no, nothing but great things to say about him. And honestly, I wouldn't say that about all the Michigan draft picks the last couple of years.
Aaron McMahon covers the Michigan football team here for M Live. He's also the co-host of Wolverine Confidential, our very popular Michigan podcast here at M Live. Aaron, thanks again for taking the time.
Yeah, no problem, guys. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Thank you, man.
This has been Ben Raven and Kyle Mikey of MLive's Detroit Lions Beat. Thank you for listening to the Dungeon of Doom, an MLive Detroit Lions podcast. Make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Acast, Apple, Spotify, Google. Like I said, wherever you get them and listen to them, make sure to subscribe to the Dungeon of Doom. Thanks again.